Hello, gents. Hello, Sam.
Hello. How are you this fine day?
Just fine. Getting back from my hot run, so calming down.
Your hot run?
Yeah, I usually in the afternoon take a walk and it's usually very hot.
Oh, so you literally mean like a run that's hot.
Yes.
Okay. I was like, I don't know what that's code for. It wasn't code for anything.
Oh, my brain's still.
Well, I had conversations with people in Spain this week, and it was insanely hot, and they were going to go jump in a swimming pool. And with Tobias, who was in New Zealand and is going to go skiing in Queenstown this weekend.
Oh, no.
So not only are we the extreme like east-west latitude, but the north-south hemisphere issue as well. So that's awesome.
That's fine.
The world in sometimes is a very, very small place. I'm actually really excited about today's meeting. Maybe I'm going to be the only one who's excited about it, but I think all three topics we have are really good ones today.
Awesome.
Can I share a small place story while we have a moment?
Sure. We're still in story time mode. Go ahead.
So I was on a text chat with a group of people, and there was a number on it that I didn't know who the person was. So I asked him who it was, and he said it was Michael Whitehead, which was Andrew's father. This was about John and so all mutual friends. So this was Andrew's father. So I was telling my wife about it, and I said, "Yeah." So the guy said he was Michael Whitehead, and Carol said, "Is that Michael Whitehead from Ottawa? I used to work with him." Had no idea it was Andrew's father. We're in Victoria where they live, but 20 years ago, Carol and Michael Whitehead, whose father used to work in a company. And even better, my dad was on the board of that company. And Michael Whitehead, Andrew's father, used to go to meetings with my dad. So there you go.
It is a
There you
small
go.
world.
That is a
That's
small world.
crazy.
That is crazy. Stephen, while we're queued for a minute, any
Yeah.
updates about John you can share with us?
Yes. He I had a FaceTime with him last week.
Nice.
I don't know if I've shared that since. So I was able to talk to him for 15 minutes or so. It was awesome. I got a note from Angie and said, "Do you want to FaceTime?" So it was a great conversation. John definitely can talk. He is, progressing through the stages. He's at the second stage of movement into, and next will be to a what is a world-class spine injury clinic in Vancouver. We talked both, the progress that he's making and the care he's getting. He's just wanted everyone to know what exceptional care he's getting in the hospital. And interestingly, he wanted to share that many of the caregivers are immigrants to Canada, and he's very thankful they're there to help him. So just he named a bunch of countries where his team is from. And so he's progressing. He is off a ventilator for a couple of hours twice a day now, and so that's an important progression. And so continues to make progress. I haven't heard too much in the last few days, except I got a note from Manjeet. I send a note about what we're doing about every second day. And John chided me that I needed to keep those coming and perhaps every day instead of every second day. So be aware that your behavior will be reported to John today.
Well, excellent. May we do him proud on the progress.
I want to second that, Sam, because I've already traded texts with John once today. He's, he does, I not super regularly, but he'll text you, right? You know, out of the blue. And it was prompted by the fact that Dave Luchek, our new full-time program manager, is just finally got official approval from his Canadian, the government of Canada that he works for in Ottawa, to begin this secondment on August 10th. And that's news we've been waiting for quite a while. And John was right on top of it, as in, about time. So he's still going to be a taskmaster for all of us. Be ready. Yeah, I love the way to think about it, which is don't let down for a minute or John will be on your case.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, he might prefer that we get work done instead of talk about him. But thank you for the update, Stephen. I appreciate that. And let's dive into it. So I'm excited about today's call. I think we have some really good topics about some really relevant stuff that I think we can move on. So this is going to be really good. Note the call is recorded. I think I have not yet posted last week's, but I've been pretty good about posting these. So we're getting into vacation season, and people are off on and off. I'm actually off next week. And so Stephen's in charge next week, but the reason I bring this up is that if you miss a call, you can download the audio or the screen recording, and you can listen to it at faster than real time. And so it gives you a good way to catch up on what happened, even though you weren't there. So I will do that when I return from vacation, and having recordings like that is useful. Usually if I take too long to upload stuff, I get pinged by somebody and as a reminder, because they're looking for it. So this is our last one in July. Mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the Antitrust Policy. We take care of each other and all work together well and avoid any legal issues with our work. Attendees list is growing, I see. Please add yourself if you would like to the list. And you're always welcome, by the way, to update anything that needs updating inside of these agendas. I try to get them created in advance. Sometimes I'm better at that than others, but you're always very welcome to add details, links, correct things, even add notes during the conversation. That's an open thing. It's a wiki on purpose. Okay, welcome to the introduction. Is there anyone new today that hasn't introduced themselves on the call and that would like to? All right, announcements. I think we'll probably pull the DIF working group charter one off of here. I did manage to miss the meeting this morning, so I can't directly report on that. Any update on TGB member volunteers needed? Stephen, is that still a thing?
Yeah, we'll be reaching out to individuals that we think might be willing and valuable contributors to that. But if anyone is interested and would like to put their name forward, please do. And that's the
awesome.
Technical Governance Board. It's Sovereign.
Yes. Thank you for expanding my acronym, the Technical Governance Board. If you want to be involved and understand important things there, that would be a good place, for a volunteer. And, while you're speaking, Stephen, you want to talk about the Indiapathon?
Sure. Do you want to, let me share for a second?
Yep.
Boy, we are really good at coining new terms. An Indiapathon.
Interopathon.
It's an Indie Interopathon. It's an Indiapathon, right?
Nope, oh my God.
It was too short.
I think it's a new type of Python. It's all good.
Okay. So I'm proposing a two-day virtual event to define the work needed in Indy and Aries to make network of networks a reality for Indy DID utilities. So this is the user story that I'm proposing for this. Again, I've in the registration for the event link, there's room for people to comment on, have we got the right goals? Are we talking about the right things? Is 2 days going to be enough, more than enough? Should we just do these in hourly calls? But anyway, I think we ought to do it as a two-day focused event. So I propose Tuesday and Wednesday, September 1st and 2nd. Do it on Zoom, times to be determined by the locations. But as I say, you know, being able to prove, include in a proof claims from credentials rooted in different indie networks and allowing a verifier to verify that. So the idea that that's what we're aiming for in this interopathon, and that touches many layers. How do you namespace indie networks? How do you add references to not just the DIDs, but to all of the objects involved in an indie credential that exists today, and so on. So that's kind of the range of things we're looking for. And hopefully people think that's a good idea and will join. And the biggest thing, at the end is the really fun part, finding resources to do this work, to make this use case a reality. That's what we're really looking for, which is we need contributors that can contribute at, you know, the DID method level, the indie node level, if that's what's needed, the, you know, indie SDK / Aries level. You know, what do we need the work done. And that's really what we're after, is getting the work done. So there you go.
Awesome. Thank you, Steven.
Add the link. I'll add a link to that, to the notes. I see you've got it in there, the same one, but I'll add it to the notes as well.
Can I ask a quick question? Is the driver for this to interoperate across sovereign networks or a sovereign and a non-sovereign network?
Oh, definitely across indie networks. So sovereign, non-sovereign,
okay.
Non-sovereign to non-sovereign. Yeah, this is really about the interop across any indie-based network.
Okay.
So, Steve, as John Lilly asked, I totally get that. I'm curious because I'm starting a conversation with Dan Burnett, who is the co-chair of the DID working group at W3C, has just left Consensus to join the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance as executive director, which sort of opens this wonderful dialogue or potential for a dialogue with the Ethereum folks about, you know, DID methods and interoperability there from a sort of full trust RIP standpoint. Would it be accurate to say that that's, you know, that's still in our ultimate trajectory, but at this step, we're just trying to cross multiple indie networks?
Absolutely. That's at where we want to go. But this will be focused on that. One of the ways I phrased it in that is, you know, the balance between what is the ideal future solution and what is it that we can do today that has a sufficient viability time range, time span. And the tricky parts is deciding, you know, what's a reasonable effort, what's a reasonable time frame for those to last. What you're talking about there is really very long term. And if we can come up with a way to do that for the very long term, that'd be great. But the biggest focus we have is, you know, to be able to have objects on more than one indie network that we can work with.
Got it. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's actually going to be really good, because I think once the lifting is done to have cross indie network compatibility, it's not going to be as big of a lift to support DID methods from other non-indie networks.
You know. Absolutely. I think part of this is going to be to resolve DIDs on indie as DIDs, you know, universal resolver style. So that's going to help there. Where it gets interesting with indie is you've got schemas and credential definitions that you have to deal with. Obviously, with BBS Plus, those kind of go away potentially. So that might even, you know, ultimately make it easier, but I don't think we're ready for that yet. We want to have something in place now, not when the next
you know, move the goalposts again.
Good point. Stephen, you showed some slides, but I don't see them linked in the, I want to share information about this event.
That's right here. In the details of registration. Yep.
Oh, okay. Announcements.
Okay. And then on Vince Albanese, I forget from last week, was this a future speaker that we should have here, or is this that this will be happening in November? Does anyone have the details on that?
Yeah. Vince did reply back on email because he's, you know, doesn't normally attend. I'll ping him again.
No, but is that for, is that the announcement that he'll future, be speaking yeah, at Direct Trust, or that we want to have him on our?
Well, to speak to this group about that event.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Yes. If you would mind following up on that, that'd be awesome. We'd love to have him pitch that event.
He did reply back. Sent to a bunch of folks. Let me ping him again.
Cool.
But, yep.
Okay. Related meetings review. Anything from IRSA? All right. I'll offer the DIDCOM working group. We talked about the DIDCOM.org domain and the mechanisms and purpose that we can use it for. That discussion was good this last Monday. This is the week for the identity implementers call at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 9 a.m. Mountain.
Yes, that's correct. And in addition to going over summaries from all the various working groups, Kyle Hartog from Matter is going to join us and give his presentation on adding DIDDoc support to IndieNode.
That'll be a fantastic topic. Cool. And then Indie Contributors, is this the off week for that?
The next one will be this coming Tuesday. So it's the on week, basically, because right. The next meeting will be before this one next week. Next up, build and deploy help request is one thing. Richard's got some things posted there. And then I'll probably add, that probably will cover the whole meeting. So there might be some related things to perhaps what Kyle talked about last week, which is similar to what he's going to talk about tomorrow and on the implementers call, and then other things to do with the interopathon.
Excellent. There's maybe also some topics from later on in our meeting about DIDKEY that I hope to talk about that may be relevant there. Cool. Any other related meetings we want to review?
Not necessarily, Sam, but it turns out until you hit the update button, we actually can't get things you've been putting in like that link.
What? Then you just hit edit and then you can get the links. So I'll do that and then re-hit edit here. Just join the editors, Drummond. That's how this works.
You can only get okay. I didn't know.
Hey, while
that,
you're in there, improve something else.
I try all the time. Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
Thanks.
Work updates. Aries Protocol Test Suite.
No changes there. Just we are working. We have a group that meets on Friday, with regard to interoperability around the Aries Protocol Test Suite. That consists of I think four different companies, and we're progressing with some manual testing as well as some Aries folks are writing back channels for Aries Protocol Test Suite. But so anyone else who would like to, who's interested in that, is welcome to join. Let me know.
Awesome, thank you, Keith. Is there a link there that that you can add to the Friday meeting notes or where it is or anything?
If you reach out to me, I'll be glad to add you to the invite. There's not a link now.
Awesome. Aries Agent Test Harness.
Yeah, some really good progress being made there. We now have connection and presentation requests, connections and credential issuance happening between for both ACAPI and .NET. Lots of tests now passing. We've also uncovered three issues to be raised between the two code bases for compatibility issues that have come up. So we're finding things, which is cool. And so far, so good. Everything's going well. We're excited about being able to do that. Yeah, we're many, many tests are completing, which is nice.
Area shared library work. I don't see Andrew today.
He's mostly been focused on actually some Rust work that is necessary for the storage initiative. So it's kind of interesting. He's got a bunch of underlying Rust crates that he's building and will be published to the Rust community that then will be dependencies used in the secure storage work.
Awesome. Aries Cloud Agent Python.
Release 5.3 was released. It is available. Mostly these were bug and feature improvements. A big one in the feature improvement area was OpenShift/Kubernetes endpoints to allow those scheduling systems to manage auto scaling, so bringing up and down pods and making sure that the communication is consistent when you're messing around with instances of an agent.
Awesome. Aries Framework Go. I don't see Troy here today. I see new notes here, Jack, on Aries SDK Ruby.
Yeah, just a little thing that there was an update of the Ruby ODF gem, and it now supports LD11. So I'm actually revisiting that. And again, the GBA ID prototype is up there. It needs more instructions on how to run it, but all the code is there.
Awesome. I have to really appreciate this list of acronyms too, by the way. That's just really awesome.
Bring your own identity, GBA, GBA IDP, which is an open ID endpoint, and then the GBA, sorry, what's the ARP?
no, it's awesome though.
Yeah, right, they're all there with links.
Very cool. .NET framework?
Oh, there's no links on those.
Or any other projects? Okay, grateful for all the work that everyone does. That's awesome that so many things are moving forward. Our agenda today, we have a couple of three main topics to talk today. First up is Daniel Hardman talking about a goal code RFC. Next up is Stephen Curran talking about the action menu RFC. He didn't actually write it, but the gentleman who did write it didn't respond and isn't available. So Stephen is willing to present on that. And then I want to lead a discussion on did key support within Aries. This is a little bit of an indie topic as well, based on current dependencies on the indie wallet, but solutions on how we can ease did key support in Aries code bases. There's some tickets and some other stuff that we can get to if we have this discussion time, and we'll see how that flows. Any adjustments needed before we get going? All right, Daniel, are you ready?
I am. Okay. So I raised this pull request, Aries RFC 519, about goal codes, and I just wanted to socialize the ideas in it a little bit so that we can get as many people as possible to weigh in on whether this is headed in a good direction. The essence of the goal code RFC is establishing some conventions around how you communicate your goals. And you could talk about that in terms of intent if you wanted. So when two parties are connecting and one says, why do you want to connect? The other could say, well, I have this intent. And the first use of goal code that I'm aware of, where we tried to formalize it a bit, was in the out of band protocol. And I think we did a good job of that there. But I think the uses for goals or declaring intent are broader than that one protocol. So this RFC does not intend to lay out all the possible uses or all possible goal code values, but it intends to say we're going to handle the naming of goal codes a particular way and the declaration of them a particular way so that they're maximally useful in many different contexts. So here are some example goal codes. And the thing to know about them is that they're organized like, in some ways, like dotted package names in Java and other programming languages, where you go from something really general like cell to something more specific like consumer to something really specific like fitness equipment or whatever. Because you go from general to specific, it's possible to declare a goal code and be imprecise. Like you could say, look, I want, my goal is something in the space of meetupcorp.personal. I'm not going to specify what beyond that. You could also, if you're writing policy for your agent, you could say something along the lines of, if I get anything that is under the Aries.cell, namespace, I guess is the best word for it. You know, consider that spam and delete all requests that have that intent. So there's more subtleties about this. I don't know if I need to go into great detail. There's the idea of directionality. In the case of selling, you know, one party wants to sell, the other party wants to buy. And there's reasons why it's a good idea to declare your intent with a goal that is sometimes directional. You can read the text there and see what you think about that. The notion that goal codes could be matched in a fuzzy way with wildcards. The notion that a goal code has a scope, and just like the subject field on an email thread gets carried through all subsequent emails on the thread, we expect that a goal code kind of colors the rest of the thread until the thread ends or you start a new activity or override it. There's a discussion about namespacing, and I am recommending that we declare or reserve the Aries alias for all goal codes that are declared in the Aries RFC's repo. And then there's a section that talks about where to declare goal codes and how to. And then there is a section where I propose a handful of goal codes, really three, that I think are important to us already. One of them is Aries.vc.issue, and another is Aries.vc.verify. And the last one is Aries.rel.build, which is essentially the it's a statement of, hey, I'd like to connect because I want to build a relationship and no further detail. So it's kind of equivalent to the goal that you have when you send somebody a connection request in LinkedIn or a friend request on Facebook. I think those goals are already relatively clear that they, you know, they have a legitimate purpose and we could be using them today. So that's the general overview of the RFC. There's more details that I'm not really talking about, but it's quite relevant to what Stephen Curran is going to talk about next with the action menu. The action menu has a way of declaring, here's the things that you can do. And you could imagine, I can't remember what the field, if it's called, it's not description, but anyway, you could express items in an action menu with goal codes. And Stephen pointed that out in the comment stream. I haven't yet updated this RFC to integrate with the action menu idea, but that seems pretty reasonable to me. So I'll stop talking now and see if anybody has questions.
Yes. Hi, this is George. So when you say you're thinking about integrating integrating action menu into this RFC, I'm curious, what exactly does that entail? Are you saying that are you thinking about integrating it in such a manner that it can be either or?
Well, no. So I didn't say I was thinking about integrating action menu into this RFC, or if I did, that wasn't my intention. I'm saying that these are related topics and we should figure out how they're connected. I think the way they're connected is that the action menu protocol might want to be updated such that one of the pieces of information that's associated with each menu item is a goal code. And I think there's already something pretty close to that there. So it would be a matter of going and looking at it and seeing, you know, where the mapping is. But I don't view the application of goal codes to be particularly specific to action menu. I think there's dozens of applications of goal codes. There's an RFC that I'm in the middle of writing about code protocols, where I think goal codes are also important, for example. So if you're in the middle of issuing a credential and you say, okay, now I need to pick a payment protocol, I need to, you know, work out with you how we can pay. And maybe there's a protocol that uses Venmo and another protocol that uses a credit card and another one that uses cryptocurrency. So you got three protocols that could conceivably be used. And so what you need to do is ask a party, what protocol would you like to use to satisfy the make a payment goal? So that's another application. And I think we're going to come up with other ones still beyond that. So action menu is just one example of a likely integration.
Okay, sounds good.
I like this a lot. This is, I think, going to help and be a really good meet point for lots of integrations and, you know, particularly like cross-platform demo things. I think it can be really useful here. I have a minor reservation that I'm really conflicted about. So I'm about to voice an opinion that is not a very strongly held opinion because I'm pretty conflicted about it. But I worry about the namespace management and reserving, you know, Aries, for example, could be useful within Aries. I think that's a good move. I wonder about the possibility of using a URI for this. And I'll tell you why I'm conflicted about it. The good news about it is that it's an existing method we have that's for collision resistant namespaces. It's pretty easy to do there. And it could even be something useful, kind of like we do with message types, where it's ideal that it resolves to some sort of instruction for the, you know, for a developer. The thing that I don't like about it is that for some reason, I feel like particularly with goal codes, it could be easily abused to do things that we don't really want it to do. For example, if the goal code, you know, is of some particular variety, then you're supposed to load the content at that URL and then like present it to the user, which I'm uncomfortable with that. And I think for some reason we're closer to that sort of misuse with this than we are with the other uses where we've used URIs. The nice part about that is that could be a naturally sort of, you know, we could do the same thing that we've done with protocol types where the last three elements indicate the useful stuff, meaning, you know, when you get to the end, it might not be dots, it might be slashes, but a similar functionality could exist. So that's my conflicted comment about the possibility of using URIs for these things rather than simply like a dotted namespace.
Yeah, we could do that. If everybody likes that idea of using URIs, I wouldn't be opposed. The way it is right now is that the first element is a namespace alias, and the alias is to a URI. So We're saying the Aries as an alias does resolve to some URI. We could declare it. We just haven't decided what it is. If we really wanted to go, you know, fancy, we could use JSON LD or something, but I'm trying to make this simple, not have a whole complicated namespace dereferencing algorithm that we have to implement. Practically speaking, what I'm suggesting is that the URI is irrelevant in, you know, ordinary processing. But you could declare a URI so that people could go learn more about your namespace of goal codes if they wanted. But I guess I don't have strong opinions in favor, and you don't have strong opinions opposed. Let's see what everybody else thinks after they, you know, chew on it a little while. All right, I'll stop sharing the screen and give it back to you, Sam.
Thanks, Daniel, for that evangelization. Any comments, questions, thoughts on goal codes? Robert mentioned in the chat that they had been working on that for the consent request, and they called it purpose codes, which I think is quite similar.
Yeah, maybe one comment regarding that. Maybe it will help in the discussions, because obviously from the consent perspective, we are thinking of an automated way of agreeing on some specific consent. For example, if someone asking you for a specific data for a research purpose, then you can say in your agent that it doesn't matter who is asking, if the purpose is research, just grant access to my data and don't ask me for anything like that. It's just a way to avoid the situation as we have with cookies on each website that you need to agree or not each time when you visit it. And obviously this is overwhelming, and the same stuff will happen probably with the consent. So obviously we need to have a mechanism where you can namespace or define the purposes, why you're asking, why you want to get into interaction with me. And if the purpose is matching the stuff which I already have in my agent, which I already preset, then obviously the negotiation can be automated or not.
I see in the chat that Drummond likes intent codes, and intent and purpose also work for me. So, you know, if everybody votes to rename them, that sounds good. I'll just comment that years ago, I started writing a programming language of my own, and its name was Intent, because I believed that expressing intent was a weakness of most programming languages. So I was actually staying away from intent because I didn't want to collide with other work I'd done on a different topic. But in the context of SSI, if we called it intent, that'd be fine.
Yeah, it's an idea, and someone else commented that it that conflicts with intents and Android or whatever. I don't have that chat right in front of me right now, but intents, purposes, goals, it's all getting the same thing done. Just semantics, that's all.
I think just important thing is to remember that it can be reused for different purposes. Obviously, the interaction with the agent is the predominant one, but obviously it can be about anything which is within that agent. If it's about the data, consent, VC, services, whatever we will have in the future. So having it as much generic as possible is one thing, but another thing is this was mentioned about the URI, to be able to uniquely identify what is your intent, what purpose we are talking about. It's my purpose the same as yours? Is just a different naming, or how this can work across the different networks and so on. So having some kind of unique identifier of those purposes definitely probably will be needed in the future, but we don't have to start with it, obviously.
That's really good. And I would just note, so I'm feeling like I want to update the pull request to talk about the data use case a little bit. But there is one that's already described in there, which is in governance frameworks. it would be really good to say, you know, like imagine that you're writing a governance framework for COVID-19 oriented use cases, and you say something like, if your intent is to screen a person before they start a work shift, then, you know, here's the rules that apply. Well, if you're trying to turn that human language into a machine readable governance framework, you need a way to unambiguously identify that phrase, screen a person before they start a work shift. And so I expect that this goal code mechanism becomes super important in turning human language in governance frameworks into machine readable governance frameworks. And that's one of the use cases that made me want to write this.
Now you're in my sweet spot. And interesting enough, what we have been calling that, and I'm wearing my governance stack co-chair hat at the Trust and Compute Foundation, in the governance framework, it's called the purpose statement. So purpose codes also work. It's all good. Whatever gets us to the same place.
The other thing that I want to underline is Daniel's desire that this is more simple rather than complicated. And I think since then, a specific worry that I have is that if it's a URI, someone's going to recommend that it be like to a JSON-LD doc or something. And now we've just made it more complicated, right? And so I think we could, if we went the URI route, specify that this is not to be resolved at runtime, which might alleviate some of those issues. It's just simply an identifier. But I also have the desire that it is simple rather than complicated for those exact reasons. One of the perks I like about URIs is that the web is such today that anyone could just make one, right? So if you're a university and you have some university-specific purpose codes, you know, for use around your institution, you can just make some without really any permission or really any technical hassle. And that's a really useful feature.
Since Robert already said it, I won't make the joke about, of course, you should be using DIDs and resolving the DID documents and resolving those to URIs and resolving those to goal codes. Yeah.
Right. There's an all the way down problem going on here.
So one question that pops into my mind is, are there use cases for goal codes outside of governance frameworks?
I think so, but that's a squishy answer, because I think that by the time people realize the value of goal codes, they're also going to want a governance framework. So it's possible that the governance framework has opinions about things that are separate from the goal codes, but they're still going to have a similar amount of utility. I think that in a future world, when the world of governance frameworks, particularly machine readable governance frameworks, is more established, I think it will be very common for them to appear there. But I don't know that, particularly at this point, I'm willing to think that it's entirely encapsulated within the concept of a governance framework.
So I gave two examples that I think are outside a governance framework. The action menu idea, I think, is useful independent, or it's orthogonal from governance frameworks. It could be combined with governance frameworks, but doesn't have to be. And the co-protocol idea, which I know we don't have an RFC about that, but I'm promising I'm working on one. But the idea that inside of one protocol, you start another protocol and you want to figure out what sub-protocol you want to launch. You could hard code what the sub-protocol is, but then that ties versioning of the super protocol and the sub protocol together. A better way to do it is to kind of loosely bind them by saying, give me a protocol that achieves this goal. And then, you know, accepting whichever is the most recent implementation of a protocol that does that. So that's also independent of governance frameworks, I think.
I also see goal codes as being useful to unite various governance frameworks, meaning you might have a goal code of X and you have three different governance frameworks that, that have an opinion about Goal Code X.
Yes.
And how it's executed. And so that's another abstraction where it's related but not encapsulated within.
You could imagine a goal code like checking references, right? You're an employer and you're checking the references on a potential hire. And you could imagine that how that particular goal is addressed in governance framework one might be slightly different than how it's addressed in governance framework two, because there's different legal jurisdictions that those governance frameworks target. So I'm agreeing that a goal code might span multiple governance frameworks.
Okay, other topics or other thoughts or opinions on goal codes while we're here?
I'm seeing several people talk purpose codes in the chat, and if you like renaming it to purpose code, please leave a comment in the PR. I'll just go with whatever the bulk of expressed opinion is. I don't care.
Awesome. Thank you, Daniel, for both your writing and presenting on that. This is very cool, and I think will be an important piece of this moving forward. Next up on the agenda is action menu. Stephen, are you ready for that?
I am. Oops, almost pushed the wrong button. Okay, Sam asked me to talk on this week because Jay Court. Steve, who is that? I think he's in your company, right?
Yes, John Court is working on implementing the decentralized identity elements into our mainstream product, and he's based in the Gold Coast in Australia.
Yeah, so he volunteered to convert our action menu HackMD document into an RFP or an RFC, so he's done that. I started to do a presentation for this and discovered that just 11 short months ago, I wrote the presentation for this, but never presented it. So I was able to just tweak this a little. So DIDCOM protocol action menu. So basically what action menu is, let's see, is a simple menuing system for an agent to select from a list of options offered by another agent. So a client would get a set of options from another agent, and this enables discoverability of services workflows and also provides a way to do data entry, and you'll see that in this. Wow, I didn't realize I'd made this such a one at a time presentation, but there you go. Interactive voice response system. So this is basically what that is. So that when you call a company and they say dial one for this, dial two for, or hit two for this, three for this, four for this, that's basically what action menu is intended to be. You dynamically perhaps or statically, a agent constructs a menu and sends it to the other agent. It can send it proactively. It might be the first protocol that gets executed after a relationship is established. Or it can do it in response to the agent saying, hey, send me your menu. So send me your top level menu. And the agent acting as the server, playing the server role, can then decide what it wants to, either just a static menu that it sends over, or it can dynamically generate one based on the context that it's in now. And that allows, of course, multi-layered systems and so on and so forth. All that would be the domain of the controller. From an agent perspective, an agent framework perspective, an execution of the protocol is simply being asked for a menu or perhaps proactively just sending a menu and then waiting for a single response from that and then doing something about it, whatever that response asks for. I found this a lot of fun. Technically, this is called a hate OAS. And it's an unknown thing. So there you go. You can look up the acronym and see what it means. It enables a really simple static request response system, but we can extend it to add all sorts of things. Could make it not static, but dynamic entirely. You know, I'm sure when the first person came up with the dial one, dial two, dial three, or, you know, hit button one, two, or three, they didn't envision how complex those systems could get. When the person who came up with the HTML form element first came up with that and used it in the first page to, you know, collect a piece of data, they had no idea what possible things could be done with it. And that's what I see this as a possibility of doing. Examples, I think what I'll do is I'll jump to, this is an example of what one looked like. I looked around yesterday to see if I could find one operating, and we don't have one operating, but here are some pictures that I took when we did have one operating. So what you are seeing here is sort of this is the title of the menu. This is one option, this is a second option, and this is a third option. These two options don't have any form elements attached. So if the user selected that, it would simply send the response that says, hey, user selected item two or item one. This last one has a data entry form associated with it with one element. So clicking this would show up this screen on the UI for another one and allow the user to enter some data about the person. So in this case, this was for IIW book. So from this, you could obtain a verifiable email credential. You could verify your participation in the system by presenting a verified email credential. And the last one is you could search introductions of others that have allowed for their name to be identified. And here you could put in a value, click search. In this case, the result back would be, here are the introductions. You know, here they chose item three and they entered this piece of data into the form element that was included in the menu. So that's an example of what it both how it works and what the UI might look like. Now remember, a single menu interaction is a protocol instance. Picking item one here could of course lead you to a response that is another protocol instance of a menu, so another layer of menuing if that was what the use case called for. It's really entirely up to the controller what they do. Further, they could use this. I was thinking about this as Daniel was talking earlier about a co-protocol. Hey, you've got to pay for this credential before we issue it to you. How do you want to pay? So this could become, the menu could become a co-protocol, which then initiated the, you know, PayPal protocol to collect the PayPal necessary, the PayPal credential, I suppose, or whatever it is, and then go back to the issue credential. So it can be used in that way as a sort of a branching off in the middle of a protocol in order to return to it later to complete it for some other sub-goal of the interaction. Here's a bunch of, you know, opportunities or ways it could be used. Offering to create a connection, scan a QR code after the connection's established, this is an example. So bank offers to connect with your mobile agent, your mobile agent scans a QR code, and then after the establishment, the first menu, the first protocol that the bank executes is to simply send you a menu of options, and the UI on your mobile phone that supports the action menu would display the options for you and let you pick what you wanted to do. Some of these are just, you know, triggering a get a credential for various things. Others are, you know, just send a message. Get a financial position credential would probably require, rechecking that you have an account credential. So make sure that you've got it, even though you're using a connection that's established. here you haven't proven anything. So if you want to see your My Financial Position, you've got to show the credential that shows you are a customer and things like that. So a bunch of options you can do. You can think of all sorts of ways this could be used. Options are arbitrary, defined, or calculated by the menu. So you could do all sorts of things. The forms parameter allows you to enter text or some other form data. I think I've covered most of these. Could be used for error handling, which is kind of interesting. You might be able to, as a substitute for calling a proof request or at the end of a negative protocol execution, such as you sent a proof, it was received, but it didn't meet the business purpose, a menu could be sent to explain why and give you options of what to do for, you know, to say retry or cancel or something like that. These are the messages that are part of it. Either the server or the client can initiate the protocol. So the full flow would be the client sends a menu request, the server sends the menu, and the client sends a perform message where it selects one of the options from the menu and sends the parameters associated with it, if any. As I said, the menu consists of a title, consisted the set of options, which is an array, and then each option could have a form array associated with it, so parameters of a form. These are for those using ACAPI. These are the controller admin APIs that exist. So originally we just had a HackMD. We now have RFC 0509 account menu. This is implemented in ACAPI, so there's a link to the code there. And basically we're looking for feedback. The thing I didn't mention in this, but I wanted to, is the connection with what Daniel presented earlier, which is completely obvious in looking, I think, hopefully anyway, that basically for each menu item, you can add a goal code or a purpose code, depending on what we call it, to one of these so that you now have a machine method for processing these menus, and you can use that for other purposes that are enabled by having a purpose code or a goal code, depending on what we call it. So I think that's a fairly self-evident way of what you might want to do with this. Oh, by the way, this option has a purpose of this, and doing this will trigger these things. Selecting this option will trigger this purpose context. And that's about it, Sam.
So I have a comment. One is that the RFC write-up actually helped me feel calmer about this. When I was first exposed, I was really nervous about the idea of forms, just because I was worried about the slippery slope and that forms were already a little further down there. But I'm feeling better about it at this point. I have some open questions in my mind that we don't necessarily have to resolve now. But one of the things is that I think it would be worth defining what the expected behavior is if you would just send a menu to someone. I think that that it's more clear when you request one and you get one back. The other thought that I had was that this feels like a pretty good way to launch into various protocols, and it would be interesting to be able to indicate that there's a couple of different ways I think that could be done. One is that if the two parties do some feature discovery, then the menu presented to the user could be only protocols that they've indicated they support, right? They could basically filter the menu out from the menu provider side. The other idea that I had is that you could actually specify the required protocols in the menu itself so that the client could filter them out. If they were not supported, or perhaps they were not yet allowed within the chosen preferences of the of the you know, of the user, for example. But that could be a pretty interesting option. But again, I don't want to make this more complicated than it's got to be. I think that having something that's actually fairly basic gives us a really good way, particularly initially. We're going to lack for a while in the community a lot of the protocols that we imagine or desire. For example, if I am connected with my bank, understanding my account balances might be useful, but we can't really do that until we actually have an account balances protocol. And so things like Action Menu, I believe, can be a crutch for the short term and exploration of different types of interaction that we may want to have. And then I believe that ultimately we will develop more rich protocols for these things. But it's sure useful in the short and medium term of the industry, where we may not have that many options, or we may want to offer things that we don't really have protocols for yet.
So a couple of comments from that is the menu first. I think I see that as this is a very likely first protocol to execute, or at least, or perhaps a first interactive protocol to use. So you establish a connection and then you say, hey, we offer a whole bunch of things you could do. What do you want to do now that we're connected? So this idea of intent the out-of-band message, can be deferred to after you're connected to, here's a whole bunch of things you can possibly do. I know who you are, and I imagine you offer a bunch of services. So the first thing you get back is a menu, so you can decide what you want to do. So it turns the controller of what is to be done to the to what we're calling the client in this protocol, rather than the other side. So it's a transition of control, I think. I do like the connection with discovery, but there's sort of two levels of discovery. One is the machine level discovery and the other is the human level discovery. This is about the human level discovery, but I like your connection there, where you can first establish the machine level discovery through a non-interactive protocol. In other words, one that doesn't involve the user, and then decide on the, going to a human level. So that's a possibility. Although again, if neither party has said a whole lot, there's a question of how much you want to share before you know even more about who it is you're connected to. So we're back to that, basis of trust question that we've talked about in the last couple of weeks. The last thing is, when you talked about balances and we don't have a lot of protocol for the account balances, one of the things that I think is really powerful in what DIDCOM does is you now have a direct connection that is secure and that you know who it is. The bat phone analogy that Phil Windley uses on either end, or at least once you establish a basis of trust, you have that. And you can actually don't need complex protocols to convey a whole bunch of information. This replaces email, this replaces SMS messages and things like that. I think that is likely to be a pretty viable mechanism, but we would need more flexible ways to interact than I don't expect basic message to be used for anything actually in production, but being able to simply send unstructured text or arbitrary text, is quite an interesting application once you've established a basis of trust between two parties. So interested, just those are my thoughts after hearing your thoughts, Sam.
Other thoughts, questions, opinions?
One thing from my side, Robert here, wanted to, because basically we are working on very similar implementation of a feature like that for the Akapai at the moment. We call it services, basically. So the intention is exactly the same, that the client hits the agent and basically ask, okay, what can you do for me, right? And then, boo, you get the list of the stuff which you can get into interaction, like get a credential, ask for specific data, ask for a specific service which the agent can offer, and stuff like that. And our implementation assumes to reuse the concept of overlay capture architecture, which actually address the problem of internationalizations, different types of the entries which you can provide for different types of the users. So basically you have a schema and the overlays behind the request of the communication of each item. So the main purpose why we are building it is because we want to present the way how the consent flow will look like in the context of the request for the data. And one of the examples is that imagine you're trying to get a driving license. You hit the agent which is responsible for issuing such a credentials. And then basically you receive the list of the stuff which you can get from that agent. One of them is getting a driving license. You hit the driving license, then you get the request back and say, okay, for the driving license, we need your first name, last name, address, and date of birth, for example. The user fills out those information, sends back to the agent, and the agent can actually proceed with the issuing of the credential. So, and we were not aware of the action menu before, so I'm really glad to hear about that. And definitely we'll take a look on the current implementation and see how actually we can extend it to the possibilities which we are thinking of for all type of the services which actually the agent can provide. And as you mentioned, it's kind of this human discoverability feature which the agent needs to have for much more complex services which can be behind the agent. It could include as well like buying a ticket or stuff like that in the future.
Really excited to see what you're working on, and hoping there might be a PR or two coming our way there as you build this, because it's really valuable.
Definitely. As soon as we'll have something, definitely we'll share that. And like I said, we'll take a look on the current implementation of the action menu and see how much we can basically align with this RFC and propose the eventual changes and improvements which we are working on.
Awesome. Yeah, one of the things I'm super interested in, and Drummond brought it up, is as you say, in the internationalization or the localization of the text, how you're doing that. We have a localization decorator. It's there, and I don't know that anyone's used it, and I'm not entirely sure how it will work. So I'm looking forward to having some real implementations and people thinking through exactly what it'll take to make it work.
Basic message has it a very, very slight piece of that included, not alternative languages, but you specify the language that the message is sent in. That's like the one feature basic message actually has.
Yeah. I mean, it's super easy to say, oh yeah, this is in English, but how do you create a place, a registry of here are the translations for this thing or these group of things. That's what I'm looking for, so that anyone can contribute, you know, the Romanian version of it. And can do the translation and contribute their translations. Go ahead, Drummond, sorry.
I was going to say, I'm not an expert at all, Stephen, but I think W3C has that aspect of internationalization pretty well down for, you know, serving HTML pages and similar resources. So it would seem that since this is fully structured machine-to-machine communication, it would seem that you can tap into or take advantage of their framework for you know, and you know, the pattern there would apply. It seems like it, again, but that's all I can offer.
Yeah, the pattern's there. It's the decentralized nature of it. You know, normally the way that works is, you know, an application has a GitHub repo or some sort of repo where it's got its translations, and anyone can do a pull request to add the translations for another language. How does that work? And maybe that's just how it will work in the future, is that's where those
repositories are. That's what I've never quite grasped, of how we create those and how people contribute to them, because it's generally going to be a decentralized contribution.
Well, there's this amazing thing called Action Menu that could be, no, seriously, I mean, talking about dog fooding, here's a protocol, and if you know, like the little button, translate this, and, you know, and get paid this, and wow, the worldwide workforce.
I like that one.
I love the fact that this could be, I think, thinking through this, I think this could be integrated into mobile apps pretty easily. Which means that if we supported this, then it actually gives us a pretty rich way to take, to have some much better user experience between mobile apps and agents, particularly in these early days.
Yeah, I saw a comment. Tomislav thought this would be complicated, but I don't think it is, because it's so constrained. You can only do so much. Now, getting localization is the real win out of it, but the rest of it is actually pretty pretty straightforward to be able to do that, to be able to implement it. You get a menu, and you know, you've got a user interface. It's got a very constrained set of rules. So, yeah, I think so.
All right, other thoughts and questions about Action Menu? All right, thank you, Stephen, for presenting and socializing that.
Okay.
The next thing up on our, I'm looking at the wrong screen here, but yes, okay. Here's where we are. The next thing is DidKey support. This is something that I've run into relatively recently. The out of band protocol specifies that we should use DidKey for keys in play. And so went looking for how to actually implement that. DidKey is a did method, which provides a translation between the actual did that you specify. An example is here. And then the did document that actually derives out from that key. This is very cool in concept. It allows you to specify a key. It's kind of a one-time use thing. It's not updatable. But one of the really useful things we have it for is when we intend to pass a key that's either ephemeral in nature or some other method here. And so I went looking for how to actually implement this. I may not have the link up. Digital Bazaar has a JavaScript example on how to actually do this. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. This actually describes how to put this together. And then they have a library. The problem with the library is that right now, it assumes that you're going to be generating the key pair within the library. This is obviously a problem, and there's not good other methods that the library has to not use one that it's generating both key pairs from, but rather something like from an Indie perspective. If I have a key inside of my Indie wallet and I want to make a did key representation of that, how I would actually go about doing that. And so that led me to want to bring this conversation up to figure out what options we actually have and to actually make this occur. If you look at the code for this particular library, they have a handful of methods. For example, they can take an ED key and give you a did doc. Here's the generate, which actually generates a key pair directly. And there's some translation here. So one of the things that I was hoping is that those that are mildly more cryptographically inclined might be able to point out what gaps might exist and what we might be able to do about it so that we can figure out a method, whether it's inside an Indie, core library. It doesn't, maybe it's part of libindie, for example, or maybe it's some extra code that we can use alongside libindie to get the effect of being able to easily process did key encoded keys inside of the Aries world that's currently semi-dependent in some cases on the Indie wallet. Any thoughts? I see Brent is present today. I don't know if you've, if this has come up in URSA at all, or with the other cryptography stuff that that you've talked about.
I apologize. I'm lurking at the fringes and hardly listening. What's going on?
That's okay. We're talking about trying to get DID key support into Aries, in particular as it relates to the Indy wallet, being able to encode keys that are inside of the Indy wallet and end up being able to get a DID key representation of that out.
So as far as URSA is concerned, I believe the keys that we would want to support, the X25519 keys, are already part of URSA, so they would just need to be used in the implementation rather than something done to make it possible to implement them.
Yes, of course. The issue is that there's two key formats that you actually there's the key agreement key and then the verification key, and you have to be able to convert from one to the other, and in particular be able to do that in a situation where you don't really have access to the private key outside of the wallet to do so.
It is my recollection that URSA supports that.
So URSA supports converting from one key type to another key type?
Yes.
Does it need both the public and the private key to make that happen?
I would have to check.
That's the issue, right? We have the public key, but what we need is the other type of key format for us to be able to do this. And that's the wrinkle, right?
Let me check it out real quick, and I might have an answer for you by the end of the call.
Cool. That would be amazing. Being able to do this in the project that I'm involved with, we're more or less going to use it. We're going to use out of band, but we're going to fake it because we don't have a good way to actually use DIDKEY legitimately. And so we're just going to pass the ED25519 key, which is not ideal, of course. And that's why we specified the DIDKEY representation in out of band.
Sorry.
Go ahead, George.
So nobody has implemented this yet in DIDCOM land? Is that the status?
The only implementation I'm aware of is this JavaScript one.
Oh no. I meant as in DIDCOM, like is anyone out there producing DID documents with service entries with endpoints being DID keys, as opposed to base 58 encoded ED25519 keys? Or
so you can't.
This is a different issue, George. I think this is where instead of passing just the public key, you pass DID key, which is a format, and then which has a multi-hash on front of it, or a multi-link in front of it. And then when you resolve it, it calculates a set DID doc.
Are we discussing specifically of using this in the recipient keys and routing keys section of the service entry, DIDCOM service entry in the DID doc? Or an invitation?
Sorry, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I believe the out of band spec actually specifies that the key pass should be in DID key format.
Yeah.
Am I right on there?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 So on the question of who has implemented an SDK that does this, Aries Framework Go has. We have an abstraction, an interface called VDRI. So we have one for DID key that's there, but unfortunately, we have not documented an example. So I was like dying to show you guys a documented example, but unfortunately, we don't have any. I could point you to the API, which is less than ideal, but we have yet to integrate this into the recipient keys and routing keys of DIDCOM service entries. But we are thinking about doing that if the rest of the community decides to.
Well, the thing that that at least I'm initially focused on is supporting the out of band RFC as written. And so in that case, that's the only message format where it's actually encoded this particular way. It's awesome that you've written that. Unfortunately, that doesn't help those of us that are using Indy wallets. because that's a dependency we have currently. And so obviously in the future, when we have better libraries that are Aries generic, then this is a feature that we would like implemented there. But my question is more in the short term, is there a way to actually do this without necessarily needing that? So the good news is that you're already there, and when the rest of us come along, then that will already work.
And just as a reminder, what was the reason why we didn't go down the multi-codec, multi-format route?
And so that's actually what this uses. And the thought was is that if we're going to actually just do the exact same thing that they're doing, just using a did key feels like a lot less complicated than trying to sort of redeclare all the decisions they just made. That's the discussion, as I recall it, about out of band.
Yeah.
So this is multi-codec, multi-base, right, encoded, which solves a number of issues. There's different, you know, key types that you can specify. There's different encodings, and it clarifies all of that. So what I'm looking for is a function where I can pass in an ED25519 public key, get this, and then when I receive one of these, I can shove it into a method that gives me back out the ED25519 key so that I can continue using it alongside the indie libraries that we have.
Yeah, that really makes me think that you must be able to produce the second key with just the public.
So I would hope so, but digging through the JavaScript documentation, now they may have just written it this way without that as a particular thing. So they have code in here, for example, where you can pass in the did doc and you can retrieve the key out of it. That's the thing. And you can get, they have some other useful things. One of the interesting parts here is that they calculate, they have an LD key, and then they use that to get the ED25519 key for that thing, right? So I'm trying to find it in the code here where I was looking at it earlier. So here's one, right? Here's the DH. I'm assuming they mean Diffie-Hellman here, right? So they have the key that was generated, and then they're grabbing the new key pair from this one, and this is also a pair. And then they use the DH key in the creation of the actual did doc itself. So that's the interesting part, is that I'm trying to sort our way through this. Ultimately, we need to be able to do this, but in the short term, we want to be able to do this to support out of band as written.
Hey, I think this is good stuff, and I'm fully supportive. I just wanted to register a note that the did peer spec has upgraded its language such that it's now possible to do the same thing with did peer that you do with did key. We could make a note in the...
Does it use the same method, Daniel?
Yeah, so basically you can say I'm declaring a peer did using numeric algorithm 0, which is the did key algorithm, and what you end up with is a did that has exactly the same semantics as a did key and exactly the same did document. So in a really simplistic mode, if you wanted to have an implementation of peer dids, you could take Digital Bazaar's library and simply do a search and replace, and take did colon key and replace it with did colon peer colon 0, and you would have a fully functional system.
So if we solve this for did key, it's also going to be useful for that encoding or that method of did peer.
Yes.
Well, good. This just got even more important.
I'm pretty sure I'm looking at some stuff online. I'm pretty sure it says you can't convert between them with just the public key. ED25519 public key maps to a single X25519 public key.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. I just posted a link in chat where the URSA code is that supports that function.
Good.
So you pass in a public key, and you get out a public key.
Yeah.
Good.
This is perfect.
I thought it had to be that way. Yeah. Good.
That's really useful. Awesome. Thanks, Brent. Cool. So in theory, we have to do a little coding here, but we should be able to write this such that we can, you know, we can use URSA as a dependency outside of libmd to accomplish the goals that we have, yeah. Right? So we can write whatever language we happen to be in. Ideally, this would be great to have in an Ares common library, but until that point, doing it outside, I think, is a really useful feature so that we can properly support it. So this is very helpful to do that. Cool. Okay, so that was the topic list for today. Any questions about this or other thoughts?
Nope, this is super cool stuff. Good job.
Cool. Any specific requests for the meeting next week? Stephen is dying to know.
I was about to ask exactly the same thing. Who wants to talk about what next week?
I sent you a note, Sam and Sam.
Yeah.
CC to Vince. So.
Yeah.
Thanks. So we may have a speaker, but I did come over XMPP.
Well, he's not going to talk about that specifically, but he'll talk about Direct Trust's use of XMPP. And then I've actually said, this community might be particularly interested. Direct Trust is the largest healthcare exchange. It basically is the backbone of the ACA. It's a .org nonprofit. 1.2 million providers are using this to ship HIPAA-compliant medical records, and they are did curious.
Did curious. Perfect. Other topics?
By the way, they did join Trust over IP, Drummond. I think that's what they told me. Is that true?
Who didn't join?
Who did?
Trust did join.
I don't know if you know that.
I'm not hearing the question exactly. Once more.
Scott Stewie is the CEO of Direct Trust. And I believe I was informed that they had joined Trust Over IP Foundation.
I think they have. The list is getting pretty long, so I'd have to go back and check it. But I'm pretty sure I was. Yeah. That was what we had a call with them to discuss. I mean, if they had, they're laggards, and we need to pull them on board.
Basically, yeah, Vince is the head of their innovation board, and I convinced him. I said, you should definitely engage this community. It seems a perfect fit. You guys just joined Trust Over IP. I put two and two together, and trying to make the
match. Excellent. Your commission check is in the mail.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Other topics for next week.
One thing we could talk about is the transition to out of band.
Yes.
Just had a question about that. We can also talk about the transition to HTTPS and HTTPS DITCOM. Since
moving forward there.
Yeah. I had a talk with Thomas Lob about that, and he had just misunderstood the approach being taken. And once he realized what was going on, he immediately, like literally that night, put it into .NET. So it's there. So hopefully now that means it's also being deployed. So I think we can turn on the transition step two of the DID transition. And I think we can start pretty soon the out of band transition step one, but it's still a PR right now. So we'll have to review and find out why it's still a PR and move it forward.
Very cool. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll mention that, but that's not a full day's topic, so we'll have to find more.
Right. Excellent. We're at time. Thanks, everybody, for coming. And I hope you have a fantastic week. Thanks for all for your contributions. And we will see you all on the internet and on the call next week.
Tim, yeah. Awesome. Hey, I'm taking a writing sabbatical in August, so I will not see you on the calls in this next month. And I'm assuming everyone else can be on vacation for months too. But anyway, just letting you know, I will miss your stentorian voice until September.
Well, maybe your therapist will have you put back together by then from hearing my voice. So.
Yeah, I'll be spending most of that time with the therapist. So, hey, you want to do this stuff, you need serious therapy. So, all right. Awesome.
Hey, thanks everybody. And we'll see you when we see you.
Yes. You bet. Bye.